Welcome to the Global Governance Podcast, where we explore the future of governance. Each episode will look at a different global issue and how governance plays a key role in its solution. From climate change to gender equality, from corruption to peace and security, we invite experts to explore a thought-provoking game of what if and why not, positing a world in much closer international cooperation. And now your host, Augusto López Claros. Enjoy.
Dr. Alessio Pecoriaro is coordinator of the Security Task Force of the Vatican COVID-19 Commission and a senior official of the Vatican's Dicastery for Promoting Integral Human Development. In this capacity, over the last 5 years, he has coordinated networks, initiatives, and events on food security, cybersecurity, nuclear and conventional disarmament, peace building, and international dialogue. He has also been responsible for maintaining institutional relations on behalf of the Dicastery, both within the Holy See and with international organizations, governments, academies, civil society, and religious groups. Previously, he was a legal advisor of the Vatican's Financial Intelligence Authority, the European Center for Law and Justice, and the European Commission for Democracy through Law of the Council of Europe. He holds a PhD from the University of Rome in Constitutional Comparative Law. His thesis addressed a very interesting topic, the processes of democratization in post-communist Central and Eastern Europe, in the case law of the European Court of Human Rights. Dr. Pecoriaro, thus, is singularly well qualified to discuss with us a number of interesting questions and areas of interest for the Global Governance Forum. Alessio, thank you for joining us today. We are grateful for your time and insights. You work for the Vatican's Dicastery for Promoting Integral Human Development. For someone who isn't familiar with the office, how do you define integral human development, and what is the role of the Vatican in promoting this form of development? How is the Church uniquely fit to address these issues?
Thank you for giving me this opportunity. I could respond to your question by simply pulling together all the dimensions you touch in your fascinating and meaningful podcast, since the very concept of integral human development views the person as a whole, with various needs and desires, and in relation with community and society at large. And this seems to me the predominant approach that your guests normally follow. This means protecting the right to life, property, food, education, health, labor, culture, a healthy environment, and cessation of violent conflicts, among countless others. We must assure the fulfillment of basic human needs, but we must also promote the flourishing of each human to their fullest potential, towards the health of the communities and societies, and true justice to be carried out throughout the world. The Catholic Church, through these various organs in the Vatican and across the world, bishops, conferences, schools, hospitals, religious orders, works together to provide both a vision of this flourishing human family according to the light of the Gospels and of the Church social tradition, and also works to bring this vision to reality by serving people everywhere. And it's not by chance that I was mentioning the influential people that you normally interview here at the Global Governance Forum, since if you want, and as it is logical that is in times of pandemic, the Church has even accelerated their natural inclination to be universal, which is the original meaning of the very word Catholic. In face of the emergency, the complexity and interconnection, the novelty of the present crisis, the Holy Father has asked us to reinforce the partnership model we are used to, seeing this as the only possibility we have to regenerate our world, to propose a different model of development. In fact, at the Vatican COVID-19 Commission, along with the many departments of the Roman Curia, you can find external partners, the best theologians combined with the best science. May this belong to Catholics, the secular world, or having an ecumenical or intelligent nature. The mandate of the Pope for the leaders of the Commission is clear and can be summarized in Trident, List, and Connect, Inspire. We need to be creative but concrete and professional also, since as he says, we cannot get out of this epochal tragedy as before. We can only emerge better or worse. It's up to each of us.
Thank you, Alessio. I guess because of COVID-19 in 2020, the whole concept of human development is being questioned. And there is, I think, a great deal of soul searching at the moment in the academic community, within government, civil society, as to whether our vision of development over the last many decades is the appropriate one. In promoting integral human development, proper nutrition is obviously a crucial part. And your office just hosted a series of webinars entitled Food for Life, Food Justice, Food for All, where you discuss food security issues. It seems that it is a very relevant topic because, as you know, the scientists are saying that climate change is going to put food security at the very center of our concerns, because it's going to affect the agricultural sectors in a very profound way, and this will be especially tough, I think, on the developing world. What is the current state of food insecurity around the world? How did we get here, and what are the ways to reduce global hunger?
Well, food insecurity is at its worst since the time of post-war, second war, and 60, 90 million people live in hunger, and between 83 and 122 million more will be undernourished due to the pandemic. The unfortunate reality is that food systems are fragile, built on inequality, and vulnerable to collapse. We have seen this even more clearly during the pandemic. Of the staggering number of people experiencing hunger, the vast majority are poor, vulnerable, and marginalized, which is truly unjust and calls for a concerted global response that secures the right to food as well as to dignified labor. Conflict also deeply impacts food insecurity, which drives a vicious cycle. And the way forward would require concerted effort from the international community to look at the entire food system, farm to fork, and imagine a just system that centers the needs of the most vulnerable communities and considers conflict, climate change, and economic crisis. Small-scale farmers and fishers can provide invaluable expertise if given a seat at the table, and indigenous and traditional farming methods can prove to be more sustainable when coupled with sustainable scientific and technological innovation. Resilience of food supply chains and distribution is a paramount goal, which can include building infrastructure that connects most farmers with local and national markets and cutting greenhouse gas emissions in all phases of the food system cycle to reduce food waste and vulnerability to external shocks. When we talk about sustainability with the integral ecology framework, this includes, but is not limited to, ensuring the following: no slave labor or dangerous chemicals are used, avoiding pollutants when there are alternatives, no land grabbing, no criminal activities. Food for all is a basic human right, but unfortunately today is still a goal, a commitment to solidarity and the recognition that everything is connected ecologically will be essential to moving forward after the pandemic.
Indeed. In fact, your comments remind me of the fact that, at least according to the World Bank, in 2020, we have had a huge setback in terms of extreme poverty. Because of the pandemic, it is estimated that more than 100 million people have fallen below the extreme poverty line. And this is really a huge tragedy because this is the foundation of the Sustainable Development Goals. It is SDG number one. And there are questions as to whether this goal is now attainable. And obviously, within that framework, food security is tremendously important because it's at the heart of the definition of extreme poverty. Alessio, let's change gears a little bit. Last year was the 25th anniversary of the Beijing Platform for Action. And while we have seen improvements since 1995, we're not yet at a stage where we can say that gender equality is a reality in any one country, let alone a reality across the globe. How does the Vatican view the role of gender equality in promoting what you call integral human development? Would you agree with me that the economic and political empowerment of women is vital for human prosperity and for security?
As Pope Francis says, the world without women doesn't work. And we still have a long way to go before the rights and protection of women and girls are totally secure. Humanity is not complete without the feminine genius, as described by Pope John Paul II. And this genius needs to be celebrated, but also promoted and secured with its basic human rights. For this to come to pass, we must keep pushing for equality on all fronts, in particular, the dignity of work and rights of workers. Women often shoulder the burden of domestic care, work, and the informal economy at large, which is not compensated and, moreover, often expected of them. Additionally, social protection systems should be expanded and strengthened. Many women face stigma when they become mothers and are unable to fulfill these roles properly, along with any other roles that they might have in their workplace or community. The evils of sexual violence continue in every corner of the world, and perpetrators must be brought to justice, victims cared for, and on violence taught and promoted everywhere. Female migrants also suffer enormously in all arenas compared to their male counterparts and must be protected with special care. Without advancement of women, the human family cannot flourish. Again, Pope Francis invites us to preach by example. Maybe we represent a minor and an imperfect example, but many women actually hold key position in the Roman Curia, starting with our own dicastery, with a nun undersecretary, or young women coming from all corners of the world in charge of super sensitive domains, and with an internationally recognized leading role, especially at the Vatican COVID-19 Commission. At our office, it even happened that you have some sections which are almost entirely directed by women, as is the case of communication. I consider those as concrete steps along the path of integral human development, and this is going up.
Yes, indeed. And it is to be hoped that we can attain SDG number 5 by 2030, although it looks like a tall order. Because in fact, and this is confirmed by studies that we have done at the World Bank, we are still living in a world in which gender discrimination through the law is very pervasive. In surprisingly, the vast majority of countries in the world. You have also, Alessio, been working on the security task force of the Vatican COVID-19 Commission. What are the short-term and long-term priorities for improving global health systems, which, you know, COVID-19 has shown to be in a state of disrepair in many parts of the world? What's holding back those countries more at risk? A bit more than 1 year after the onset of the pandemic, what are some of the lessons that you see emerging from this pandemic, from this very severe crisis?
It is true that working from the Vatican gives us an exceptional perspective on global health systems, if you want. Above all, as with any issues, an integral approach is really vital, and that takes into account the local context and all related issues. Our perspective is not only from the high level, but really grounded in the experience of all the people and Catholic health workers on the ground across the world, which give us unique opportunities to support and strengthen the system from multiple levels. It's also often the case that the religious service providers enjoy more access to and trust from citizens, and that is part of the reason that the Catholic Church is the largest healthcare provider in the world. First of all, as a lesson from this pandemic, as well as a long-term goal, we have seen that prevention is absolutely key. The world was not prepared for this pandemic, and we will not be ready for another unless we take the lesson learned from coronavirus and commit to implementing systematic change. More resources should be allocated to detecting and responding to public health events and developments, including change in health demographies, technological advances, and new and emerging threats to health security. International collaboration in this is essential too, and to share best practice and resources among countries and organizations. In the shorter term, access to healthcare is still deeply unequal and unfair, especially in countries where violent conflicts and poverty are widespread. Outside of the wider goal of the ceasing violent conflict, a short-term focus ought to be improving the delivering of health support to countries most at risk. One path towards this goal is inventing innovation and new technologies to improve current therapies and diagnostics. A conflict-sensitive approach should also be integrated into health delivery service. This refers to careful analysis of each context and modifying each approach to the needs of the community.
In the report, Alessio, you mentioned the need for global solidarity to combat the pandemic and the effects it has brought. What do you think is the role of multilateralism in combating COVID-19, as well as human development more broadly? It seems to me that COVID-19 has perhaps shown the importance of international cooperation, nations coming together and working to face some of these global challenges. Are you concerned about the consequences of rising nationalism in many corners of the world?
Multilateralism is crucial to proper governance at any time, but the pandemic has made even clearer that everything is connected and that strong and trusted institutions can work more agilely to address difficulties as opposed to fractured ones. The Church, in particular, has always supported a multilateral approach to international relations, both through its own networks and throughout all levels of society. A commitment to global solidarity will be essential to guarantee human development. No state, and in fact no person, can be truly secure if one's neighbor is insecure, as insecurity is injustice. It's a fallacy which we call the security dilemma. Many states think that by turning inward, they can secure their own security, when in reality they shut themselves off from the fraternity, which will allow for true security of all people, not just the nation state. Finally, expanding democracy is key. Let me give you the example of Italy between 19th and 20th centuries. More specifically, I'm referring to a famous analysis from one of the greatest historians of that time, Gaetano Salvemini, in one of his most famous books, Il Ministro della Malavita, the Minister of the Underworld, of the Mafia, if you want. He was accusing Giovanni Giolitti, one of the most influential Italian heads of government of all time, of having poisoned the institutional life of the newly former Kingdom of Italy, above all for the numerous documented cases of electoral fraud. This is, of course, debated among experts, and history is not my specific domain. Still, those analyses are pretty powerful from at least a couple of points of view. Italy was under a development which could be defined integral for the time, or at least multidimensional, economic, healthcare, intellectual, and even ethical, thanks to especially to the action of the first new born modern political parties. Still, at the same time, this is undeniable progress was elitist by nature. Freedom of speech, press, association, and the like started to take place, but the elites rejected systematically the demand for broader participation, for example, by impeding the universal suffrage. Salvemini was a meridionalista. His theory has to be read through the lenses of the old debate of the conflict between North and South, which is complex, controversial, and tough in my country. But I think it's a good example of misalignment between formal and real democracy. Today, democracy is much more complex, but the question for us remains how to read and vivify it through the axis of the integral human development by eliminating the concrete barriers that impede its fulfillment and putting it into practice on a global scale.
Thank you for those interesting remarks. In the encyclical letter Fratelli Tutti, Pope Francis said, and I quote, "International peace and stability cannot be based on a false sense of security, on the threat of mutual destruction or total annihilation, or on simply maintaining a balance of power." In this context, he said, the ultimate goal of the total elimination of nuclear weapons becomes both a challenge and a moral and humanitarian imperative. with the money spent on weapons and other military expenditures, let us establish a global fund, he said, that can finally put an end to hunger and favor development in the most impoverished countries. Nuclear disarmament and pandemic recovery may at first seem like unrelated issues. From your perspective, working on the Security Task Force of the Vatican COVID-19 Commission, why is nuclear disarmament important for pandemic recovery and human development? As an economist, I have no problems, obviously, with the argument made by the Pope. I think we spend far, far too much resources on propping up military establishments and building weapons, the ultimate purpose of which is to destroy human life. It is obvious that the arms race has been detrimental to economic development and human progress. There is no question whatsoever that if we had allocated those resources to human development, we would be in a far stronger position today than is the case. What arguments can we put forward to those who represent the interests of the military-industrial complex, to use that famous phrase coined by President Eisenhower in the 1950s?
It is true that the link between disarmament, both nuclear and otherwise, and the pandemic is not immediately apparent. Yet, when we consider the extreme amounts of military spending by powerful governments, which has not abated at all during this year of pandemic, it's clear that that money could have been used to furnish needed personal protective equipment, testing kits, vaccine development research, and basics such as unemployment compensation, rent relief, food vouchers. The list goes on and on. The priority of these governments to pursue security by military means is misguided, and the pandemic has made it clear that our primary needs as human family encompass these basic human rights to food, jobs, health, and peace, none of which are secured through nuclear arms development. Those working in the military-industrial complex know far better than me the fragility of international relations at this time in history, which is more complex and closer to all outward than even before, in large part due to the pandemic as well. As the Pope says, this false sense of security and threat of destruction is no way to build flourishing societies. Laying down arms will make a significant shift in the global order. But this is only way forward to our world, because the alternative is total destruction. I know that by, let's say, putting something, by evidencing in a strong way a danger is not enough. I can give a personal example. I used to smoke 2, 3, 4 cigarettes by day at the latest. And when my first son told me, you see on this package there are all these horrible images of people got sick, I realized for the first time that it was not just only those images per se, but the fact that a person was caring about my health. And this is the same, I think. It's not just the fact that we potentially risk the end of the world, but the fact that we can meet, we can foster dialogue, and we can reinforce the social friendship that Pope Francis has so strongly highlighted in his last encyclical.
Yes, indeed. I must say that I found his words very, very compelling and very persuasive, and also reflecting a deep concern for humanity, for the poor, for vulnerable groups in society. Ultimately, those are the people for whom we have a responsibility to use our resources in a more effective way. Alessio, as you know, income inequality has become a big global issue. As an economist, I have ceased to think of it simply as an economic problem, and I'm also looking at more and more in its political ramifications, because I think that if we allow it to continue to spread, it may very well undermine our democracies and our political and social order. What role do you think income inequality has in promoting or preventing, you know, human development?
Even not being myself an economist, I know there are various ways we can measure income inequality, you know, the Lorentz curve, the Gini coefficient, and others. But what is important to notice here is that the income inequality is increasing across the globe. For example, income inequality in the U.S. is found to have increased by about 20% from 1980 to 2016. Here in Italy also, between 1989 and 2016, the Gini coefficient has jumped from 0.47 to 0.44 over the period considered. And we know that the income adversely affects various dimensions of human development. It negatively affects education and health. It breaks social cohesion, as the UNDP defines, to the extent to which people trust each other and participate in the civic and social life of their communities, and peace and security, the safe environment people need to develop for their full potential. As a coordinator of the Security Task Force of the Vatican COVID-19 Commission, I'm especially interested in the effects of the income inequality on a global security. For example, I find the following observation striking. In countries with high internet penetration, income inequality correlates positively with both inequality and information poverty. Violence is also linked to the inequality. There are more homicides in countries with higher income inequalities across all categories of human development. Income inequalities intensify social hierarchies, causing social anxiety and class conflict, demanding trust and social cohesion. Laudato si, Pope Francis warned, this vision of might is right has engendered the immense inequality, injustice, and acts of violence against the majority of humanity, since resources end up in the hands of the first comer or the most powerful, the winner takes all. And he adds in Fratelli Tutti that eliminating inequality requires an economic growth that can help to tap each region's potential and thus guarantee sustainable equality. I believe increased wealth without addressing inequalities is an empty growth and only adds obstacle to integral human development and global security.
One area on which the Vatican has traditionally had a concern is the labor market, the proper functioning of labor markets. And new technologies are constantly altering what it looks like to work and live as a human being in 2021. And further technological changes are inevitable. And this is raising questions in the minds of many about, you know, the future of work and the impact of technologies on the future of work. Your office now has a working group on new technologies. What are the drawbacks and advantages of new technologies in promoting integral human development? How can we use changes in technology to uplift marginalized communities?
New technologies represent great opportunity and great risks. And the challenge will be for developers and users, whether corporate, government, or otherwise, to keep the technology at the service of humans, their needs, and their flourishing. Technology is not neutral, as the Pope mentions in Laudato Si, and they express the values and norms of the society that produce them. But technologies also help to shape those values and norms by making certain behaviors easier, more habitual, and thus more normal. Given the pervasiveness of technology in modern life, there is an urgent need for ethical global leadership to promote a human-centered approach to digital technologies in the name of the common good. In that sense, in September 2019, our Dicastery has held an international conference called precisely The Common Good in the Digital Age, when we sit together along with the representative of international organizations, private sector, academy, and other religions. And this work is continuing in the Securitas Force with the group you were mentioning, the one who is called New Technologies for Peace and Integral Human Development. This group is exploring the intersection of new advancements in technology and ethical theological reflection and analysis. Countless new technologies such as blockchain and artificial intelligence can be utilized for integral human development, food, healthcare, labor, disarmament, peace processes, but it's up to the world to commit to this vision and put the technologies at the service of the common good.
Alessio, thank you for this very interesting podcast. We are coming to an end, and I want to give you the opportunity to basically direct some words of hope to young people today. They are the ones who will bear the brunt of the consequences of the many unresolved problems we have today, you know, from income inequality to gender inequality, and obviously perhaps the biggest of them all, uncontrolled climate change. And, you know, these young people sometimes feel frustrated for the inertia or lack of action of today's political leaders. They're the ones who 10, 15, 20, 30 years from now will bear the brunt of the consequences of our inaction today. Please direct to them some words.
Thank you so much for this question, Augusto. First of all, I can consider myself seeing a young professional, let's say, but mostly I'm a father of two young children. So this question is very important to me. Despite the challenges in politics and the true events of the world, young people already hold such great power to fulfill the goals which today leaders cannot. In the Vatican COVID-19 Commission, the Pope has asked us to prepare the future now, not prepare for the future. Unfortunately, the world, especially in Western society, seems pushing young people on the margins, like if they were a burden instead of the most precious resource we have in preparing the future. I invite young generation to rise against this vision and reality, first of all, by pretending a role in social life and by not remaining indifferent to what is at stake in our troubled times. The German physician, psychiatrist, and philosopher Karl Jaspers, whose wife was Jewish and who hid Jews from the authorities, distinguished between four types of guilt regarding the responsibility of German people on the crimes against the Jews. First, legal guilt comes of violating inequivocal laws and is capable of objective proof. For that, criminal courts were at work against perpetrators of Nazi crimes. But he spoke also of a political guilt, which is descended from the fact that, as known, Hitler had come to power through institutional elections. Then there is the moral guilt. I am morally responsible for all my deeds, including the execution of political and military orders. It's never simply true that orders are orders, he said. But Jaspers' last category, metaphysical guilt, is a little more troubling if taken to an extreme. Why we survive these tremendous tragedies of history and victims know. This is the case of the Jews during the World War II, but also of migrants who die in the Mediterranean Sea, or war victims of contemporary conflicts. Can I be indifferent to all that? No, evidently no. So I need to respect laws by not being blind obedient. Develop a social political awareness, be ethical and consider that any suffering committed against any brother or sister of mine in any single corner of the world affect my life also, and take position against injustice. This is my advice to young people.
Thank you for listening to the Global Governance Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with friends and family. To learn more, please visit globalgovernanceforum.org and join the conversation.